I talk about vitamin C a lot on this podcast. That is because it is an antioxidant that comes with many skincare benefits when used both internally and externally. You've probably heard me mention a few times before that I use a vitamin C serum almost daily. Well, what I've been keeping secret is that I have also been using My Body Greens Vitamin C Potency Plus. Our newest supplement to the market delivers 100 milligrams or 1 gram of vitamin C plus 100 milligrams of citrus bioflavonoids in just 2 capsules. This is very important because your body cannot make vitamin C on its own, like it can make many other antioxidants. This means you must ingest vitamin C daily to get your fill. And guess what? Almost half of the U.S. adult population has a vitamin C gap or nutritional inadequacy. I mean, that is not great for many overall health reasons, but for beauty purposes, it is especially worrisome for one particular reason: collagen. Your body needs vitamin C to promote collagen synthesis. Additionally, it helps support your skin's barrier and fights oxidative stress by actively neutralizing free radicals. For our listeners, you get a very special discount if you use the code VITAMINCPOD. Type in that code and you will get 25% off a la carte and subscription. If you want more information, please visit the URL mindbodygreen.com/vitamincpod and you can read all about it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mind Body Greens Beauty Podcast, Clean Beauty School. I am your host and Mind Body Greens Beauty Director, Alexandra Engler. On this podcast, we explore beauty through the lens of well-being. And on today's episode, we are talking all about hair health and how you can take care of your hair as you age and how you deal with hair loss and just a ton of questions that I know that I have around hair, and I know that some of our MBG community members have around hair as well. To do so, I am having on a very special guest, Dr. Neera Nathan. She is a board-certified dermatologist and a researcher at Massachusetts General Hospital, as well as on the faculty of Harvard Medical School. So I feel like I'm in very great hands. Dr. Nathan, welcome.
Hi, Alex. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you for the introduction. My name is Neera. I'm a board-certified dermatologist based in Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm so excited to be here and join the ranks of many of my colleagues who've actually joined you on their podcast. So super exciting to be among the greats. I feel very honored.
Well, you certainly deserve to be right up there. So, you know, I always like to start off these episodes by allowing the guests to introduce themselves and, you know, share their story. So, you know, what was your journey into medicine and more specifically dermatology?
So I come from a family of physicians who served our small town in Western Maryland. And I really admire both of my parents for what they did for the community. But then when my big sister ended up going into medicine, to be honest, I was young and I just wanted to be different for the sake of being different. So I tried other things. I interned at a law office. I interned on Capitol Hill. But ultimately, I just came back to medicine. Like, the pull was like very great. And I ended up completing a combined bachelor's and medical degree program. So that's when you apply directly from high school and you get into both college and medical school at the same time, just kind of contingent on keeping good grades. And then in my last year of college, I knew I was going to medical school, but I really hadn't put much thought into what I wanted to do. So at the time, I was studying abroad in Australia. And I remember being so impressed by their public health campaign about the risks of sun exposure and skin cancer as this really preventable disease. And then during medical school, I sought out opportunities to help care for adults with skin cancer, which was really rewarding. And I was also able to care for children with very rare conditions that had visible skin lesions. So, you know, I realize that as dermatologists, we not only can make people feel better in their own skin, but we can really make a difference in someone's overall health. So I just feel, you know, so lucky and grateful to be part of this really amazing field.
And, you know, I'm always curious about, you know, what people specifically enjoy about their jobs, or, you know, what areas particularly interest of them are of interest to them. And, you know, same question to you, you know, what areas of dermatology particularly pique your interest?
There are so many. I am really interested, let's start, in cosmeceuticals. So that is the science behind the ingredients and products that are in our skincare and hair care. I was really lucky to train at Mass General, and a lot of the laser technologies were actually invented there, which was super cool. I was able to run some clinical trials and lasers and devices. I also have special training in Mohs micrographic surgery. That is a special type of surgery that's used to treat skin cancer, and it has exceptionally high cure rates. And then ultimately, you know, as a board certified dermatologist, I really do believe that we are the experts in all things skin, hair, and nails.
I always like to ask this next question because I think it illuminates, you know, what the broader conversation to follow. And it's, what is your beauty philosophy?
I am a true minimalist. So I would say, you know, take really good care of your skin and hair. I think to me, beauty is not about looking a certain way, but instead just being the most vibrant, healthy version of yourself.
Okay. And what is your well-being philosophy?
It's similar. Bare bones. You know, I think eat well, prioritize sleep, take walks, and then foster really close friendships. I think those are the keys to health and happiness for me.
Yeah. So, you know, as I alluded to earlier, today's episode is all about hair health. And, you know, we're going to be talking about hair loss and hair growth and, you know, just a few of the variables that kind of fall within this conversation. And it's a complicated topic. And I want to lay the groundwork for folks because it is complicated. And I think one of the best places to start is to talk about hair growth, the hair growth cycle and the stages that are within it. Because, you know, I don't know if people always realize that your hair is constantly growing in, you know, various stages, and there is like a cycle to this. So, you know, I would love if you could explain, you know, that cycle to us.
Yeah, of course. So let's see. Let's start with anagen. So that is the growth phase. And I would say the majority, so about 90% of the hairs on our scalp at any time are going to be an anagen. And anagen lasts for years on the scalp, but only lasts for months on the eyebrows and eyelashes. And that's why, you know, the hair on your scalp can grow really long, but your eyebrows and eyelashes can only grow so much. And anagen is then followed by catagen, and that's where the hair follicle shrinks or regresses. And that phase is going to last about 1 or 2 weeks. And that's followed by telogen. And this is where the hair follicle is resting or asleep. And this takes about 3 months to complete. And exogen, which is the actual shedding of hairs that occurs at the very end of telogen, is going to then complete the hair cycle and bring us straight back to anagen.
Okay. And, you know, throughout this cycle, what are some of the things that might be affecting it, you know, perhaps triggering it to go into the loss stage quicker? Or, you know, basically, what are the common triggers for hair loss?
Yeah, so, you know, there are a couple. You know, hormones definitely play a role, there's no question. I think in men, there is a particularly strong relationship between an androgen called DHT, or dihydrotestosterone, and hair loss. DHT causes the hair follicle to shrink over time, so it's going to turn those thicker, longer hairs into wispy, shorter hairs, and eventually the entire follicle is going to disappear. Now, this hormone also plays a role in female pattern hair loss, but the exact role of hormones in hair loss in women, I think, is a bit less clear. Age, definitely all also a factor. So frequency of hair loss increases with age, we know that, but people of all ages can experience hair loss. And finally, stress is a huge trigger in hair loss and absolutely plays a role.
I want to, you know, dive in a little bit more on the age-related aspect of it and the stress as well. But we'll start with age because I'm curious, you know, why does age affect our hair? You know, I think people know that it happens. They can see that it happens. Certainly, you know, I'm starting to see some grays pop in and, you know, I'm curious, you know, what is happening? Why does age affect hair so much?
Yeah. So again, it's a really interesting area of research and I'll give you kind of my general take on it. When we age, our whole body, right? Eventually what happens is our cells just kind of get tired and they stop working as well as they used to. And the hair follicle is no different. It is a collection of cells. And after cycle of the hair cycle, those cells start to deplete. So eventually our hair follicles just aren't able to grow hair as well, just as our skin isn't quite as able to regenerate collagen the way it did when we were younger. So our whole body goes through aging. I think aging is really the body just slowing down. That's what happens in the hair follicle.
Sure. Stress, you know, this is obviously something that is in a lot of people's minds. Certainly, you know, stress-related hair loss was a big topic of conversation during the pandemic. I think that was a great education moment for people where they realized that, oh God, stress on the body really can, you know, affect hair growth. And just in general, I think anybody who's gone through moments of stress likely has experienced something in this vein. So what is happening when you experience stress-related hair loss?
So this is like one of my favorite things to talk about. So I'm so glad that we're focusing on this today. So there are several ways. So acute or short-term stressors are known to cause hair loss by causing those growing hairs in anagen to abruptly shift into the resting phase or telogen. And that's going to result in excess shedding about 3 months after that stressful event. So I think it's really important for people to understand it's not immediate. It's not like you have stress and you wake up the next morning and all your hair is on your pillow. There is that delay for telogen to occur and then that exogen shedding event. And when you have this type of stress-induced hair loss that happens 3 months after a stressful event, it is called telogen effluvium. And it is going to present as kind of diffuse all over thinning, but sometimes people, especially women, will notice it mostly around their temple area. And people experiencing telogen effluvium will often say, you know what, my ponytail is a lot thinner. I'm seeing a lot more hair on the brush or in the shower drain. And those are some signs. So physically stressful events are one group that can trigger telogen effluvium. And those include childbirth, illness or surgery. And, you know, you mentioned COVID, Alex. During COVID, so many people experienced hair loss about, you know, 3 or 4 months after recovering from the illness. So it absolutely was one of those physical triggers. And similarly, a serious emotional stressor. So divorce, loss of a loved one, this can also trigger this type of hair loss. I think the good news is that telogen effluvium is generally temporary. It shouldn't cause complete baldness. And the hair does slowly begin to regrow after the trigger resolves. But I will say in a small set of people, and this is particularly women in their middle age, telogen effluvium can be long-lasting or chronic. And it's not exactly clear why this happens, but the hair continues to shed for longer than 6 months. Serious emotional stressors have also been linked to another form of hair loss called alopecia areata. This is a patchy form of autoimmune hair loss that can occur in kids and adults. And there's also some growing new evidence that low levels of chronic stress, so we're talking day-to-day stress, can actually elevate our stress hormones like cortisol, which can in turn gradually shorten the hair growth phase and ultimately turn off our hair follicles. So we're talking stress from our daily commute or jobs can be contributing to hair loss over a lot of period of time. And this is a huge potential trigger of hair loss for so many people.
I don't want to sound alarmist, but that's so scary. I mean, you know, that's day-to-day stress. You know, when you talk to people about this, how do you talk to them about specifically that last one? Just because that does sound scary, right? I mean, it sounds scary that even day-to-day stress can trigger us to lose our hair. No one wants to hear that. How do you talk to people about this? How do you, one, you know, comfort them, and then two, help them understand how they can help themselves either manage stress better or manage their hair better? You know, what sort of conversations are you having?
You know, I think it's challenging. This is such a, hair loss is such a rapidly evolving field in dermatology. There's so much research going into it, and we're learning more about hair loss and hair graying literally every day. So I always say the landscape's evolving, and this is kind of the way that, you know, this is how we can use what we know now, but just know that what's true today may not be true in 6 months, certainly may not be true in 5 years. We may be doing things differently, right? I think that's true with anything. So I think as far as the chronic kind of day-to-day stress, I think that in the study I'm referencing, I think that cortisol or stress hormones were particularly identified as what is really harming the hair follicle. So, you know, I would tell anyone, you know, to reduce your chronic stress that could potentially be leading to hair loss, try to reduce your cortisol levels. So again, not a lot of research on specific interventions to reduce cortisol levels, but there are a couple things that have some data. So for one, meditation, specifically transcendental meditation or TM, I am a huge avid practicer of TM, has been shown to reduce some of those stress levels in people who practice often. And movement, exercise, aerobic exercise can also reduce cortisol levels. So those are things to try as best as you can to work into your day-to-day routine. I mentioned when we were talking about wellness, prioritizing sleep. It is so hard to do, but if you make it a priority, just like you make it a priority to brush your teeth in the morning or go to work in the morning, then you can really reap the benefits from sleep. Our body cannot function without sleep. I will personally say I go to bed at 9:30 almost every single night, and I get 9 hours of sleep. That is how important I think it is, and I practice what I preach to others. So I think those are some things that we can do. And then, of course, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later about other more kind of concrete strategies for targeting hair loss.
Yeah. And I also want to ask about diet, because, you know, I think this is an area where people are just endlessly curious about how nutrition plays a role in hair growth and hair health in general. And I also think this is an area where there's a lot of confusion too, you know? So I'm curious, how does nutrition play a role in hair health? And two, you know, what can people do to support their hair through their nutrition?
I think this is such a great question, and you hit the nail on the head. I think there is a lot of confusion about this, so hopefully I can help clear some of this up. So we know in medicine from observation of people who have inherited disorders of vitamin metabolism or severe malnutrition that hair growth is absolutely dependent on basic nutrients and overall internal health. No questions there. So crash diets, very restrictive diets, or diets completely void of protein can cause hair loss. And the way that I tell people to think about this is when your body goes into panic mode and is trying to conserve resources, your hair will be among the first to suffer because it's not an essential function. So your resources are going to be routed elsewhere. And as far as what you can do, I think the first thing that everyone should make sure they're doing is eat a very balanced diet. It sounds simple, but it is really important, not just for your hair, but your overall health. Make sure you're getting enough protein, because protein is needed to make hair. Our hair is primarily keratin, which is protein. It is that simple. And most healthy women should aim for about 40 to 60 grams of protein per day. And I do think that's a lot more than many of us are getting. And there are other nutrients and vitamins that are additionally important for the hair follicle to function or work normally. So aside from protein, deficiency. So we're talking low levels of biotin, selenium, zinc, vitamin D, and fatty acids may be linked to hair loss. So When I say eat a varied diet, some of the foods that are rich in the nutrients I mentioned are wild caught fatty fish, nuts, leafy greens, and whole eggs. But I do, you know, I think the context of this conversation, I do want to be clear that more is not always more. So we also know that too much of some of these nutrients have actually been shown to cause hair loss or to cause other serious problems.
Wow. So yeah, I mean, it definitely is a tricky balance. And, you know, one thing that I have done is, you know, I get my levels checked. And I'm curious, is that something that you encourage people to do regularly? Or is there a, or, you know, is that one of those things that, you know, people should do when they start feeling XYZ? You know, how do you approach the deficiency conversation and, you know, getting your blood checked?
My feeling in general is that most, not all, but most healthy people who eat a varied balanced diet are unlikely to become nutrient deficient. So that's most, but not all. I would say to people who are experiencing hair loss, some doctors may test your stores of certain nutrients and come up with a plan for supplementation. And I'll give you an example. So for instance, vitamin D and iron are very common deficiencies and of nutritional deficiencies, and they may be associated with hair loss. So those are some of the nutrients that may be tested if you were to come to a doctor and say, hey, I've been losing my hair. This is unusual for me. This is new. What can I do?
Okay. And then, you know, obviously hair care products and topicals are certainly a part of this discussion as well. You know, obviously what we put on our hair and what we put on our scalp affects not only the hair fiber health, but affects our scalp health and can theoretically, you know, get in the way of healthy hair growth or encourage healthy hair growth, right? So, you know, what do you tell people in terms of topical products and, you know, hair care products? Are there general rules of thumb that you tell people to follow for, you know, healthy hair growth?
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, you know, your scalp is skin. It's just skin that's growing terminal or thick hair. So it needs to be treated gently and with the care you would use when treating the skin on your face. And every hair follicle is actually a pore. So remember that the things that you're putting on your hair or scalp have the potential to get absorbed. So I would probably aim for clean products for your hair. And what I mean by that, because it can mean a lot of things. So avoid silicones, which can clog pores not only on the scalp, but on your face. Avoid sulfates and synthetic fragrances because those can cause irritation or allergy. And taking care of your scalp is going to really ensure that you have the most healthy environment to help grow your hair. And we know if you have too much irritation or inflammation on the scalp, you can lose your hair. And likewise, really tight hairstyles, overprocessing your hair with chemical treatments, heat styling can affect your hair and scalp by causing inflammation, hair breakage, and ultimately hair loss. So you really want to minimize those things. And I think ultimately, less is more in my book when it comes to hair care.
I think that definitely laid a ton of great groundwork for us. I feel like we have a pretty fantastic baseline knowledge here. And, you know, then some. I also reached out to some MDG community folk, and I wanted to get some of their questions about hair growth and hair health in particular. So I have a few that I'm going to be sharing here today, and we can kind of talk through them together. I'm really, really excited because many of these are questions that I have. So, you know, I feel like we're all going to be benefiting from this. So one of the questions is, I have a thinning hairline and part. Why is it most apparent in these areas? And how can I target those specific areas to grow back fuller? I love this question because this is something that, you know, I have personally gone through. I feel like a lot of people I know deal with this. So, you know, essentially it's just about how, you know, why does thinning happen in, you know, more targeted specific areas? And then how can you help, you know, regrowth in those areas, basically?
So this is super common. Pattern hair loss or androgenetic alopecia usually causes widening in the part line for women and a receding hairline or baldness on the top of the scalp in men. And we think this is because the hair follicles in those locations may be more sensitive to DHT, which is the hormone we discussed plays a role in hair loss. So if you are experiencing hair loss in certain areas, I think topical treatment targeted to those areas would be a particularly good place to start.
When you say topical treatment specifically targeted those, are you talking about like hair serums or, you know, are there specific ingredients that you're telling people to look for? Just, you know, just so people have a way that they can start, you know, an avenue to go down.
Sure. So as far as topical ingredients, you have options. So topical minoxidil is an FDA-approved topical treatment for hair loss. It comes in different concentrations and formulations, but the best bet is going to be the 5% foam. It stays put and maybe a little bit better tolerated. I will say minoxidil can cause irritation and excess facial hair growth. And it's also important to note that you may notice even more shedding within the first month or two. But like most hair loss regimens, you really need 3 to 6 months of consistent use to see results. Now, if someone is looking for a natural topical treatment for hair loss, I think there's really exciting data about topical caffeine. So you can look for serums that contain that. Turmeric is actually another ingredient to look for in hair scalp care, especially if you're prone to a particularly dry or irritated scalp. This can help get your scalp in really good shape for growing healthy hair. And there's also some early data that turmeric may help block DHT also.
Oh, fascinating. Okay. You know, those are great, great starting points. Okay. So the next question that I'll go back to is about postpartum hair loss. The reader asks, I know postpartum hair loss is common, but I feel like I lost too much and now my hair is thinner than it was before. Is this normal and what can I do?
So I would say if it's only been a year or so, I would probably give it time because most postpartum hair loss or telogen effluvium resolves on its own. And the hair takes time to grow back, especially if you have long hair, it's a slow process. But if it's been longer than a year, let's say it's been a couple years, it is possible that the postpartum hair loss actually uncovered another type of hair loss, like female pattern hair loss or androgenetic alopecia, which becomes more common as we age. And so that can explain why hair doesn't completely get back to its full density. So I would recommend that, you know, if that reader is particularly concerned, they should go see a board-certified dermatologist to get the right diagnosis and then come up with an individual treatment plan.
Okay. Quick follow-up then, you know, obviously your point about hair growth takes time is absolutely noted. But, you know, just out of curiosity, typically at what point does postpartum hair loss start? And when about do you, you know, expect it to resolve?
So it's not instant. You know, you get this beautiful baby and the hair loss is not going to, you know, fall. The hair is not going to come out the next day. Like, you know, other triggers for telogen effluvium, after childbirth, there's usually a few month delay before you start seeing the shedding. And we think that the shedding generally lasts for several months, but really it should have stopped by the 1 year point and your hair should really be showing some signs of regrowth by 1 year. So I use 1 year kind of as a mark. You know, if you just had a baby, you're within that first year, I wouldn't worry. But, you know, if your baby's 2 or 3 now, I think there may be something else going on rather than just the routine postpartum hair loss.
Okay. The next question from one of our MBG Beauty listeners has to do with curly hair and how much is normal to lose. So this reader asks, I have curly hair, so I don't brush it daily, and I wash it only 2 to 3 times a week. So when I do detangle and wash it, it feels like a lot of hair comes out. How can I tell if I am losing the normal amount of hair?
So this is another really common question. You know, we shed 50 to 100 or so hairs per day, and that is normal. But the amount that you see in the drain or on the brush is just really going to depend on how often you brush or wash your hair. So if you brush or wash infrequently, that shed hair is going to accumulate until you brush or wash again. And there are hair shedding scales, like even ones particular for curly hair or longer hair that you can find online to see what that 50 to 100 looks like. So you certainly don't need to, you know, go and count. But keep in mind that if you're only washing your hair every 3 days, you probably are going to see 3 times that normal amount in the drain when you do.
Okay. That's helpful to know because I'm somebody who definitely falls in the camp of I don't wash my hair as much. And so, you know, every time I take a shower, I'm like, is this normal? I'm pulling out hair. Just feels like the glob falls at times. But okay, so the next question has to do with dry shampoo. This is something that I know beauty editors get asked a lot about. I am sure that you get asked a lot about this as well. The question is dry shampoo really that bad? Or can I still use it if I wash my hair regularly? I think this is a great question, and I would also like to know.
It is a great question. So I personally think dry shampoo is a nice tool to absorb oil and kind of give that instant volume to your roots in a pinch. But if it is used too often or without traditional shampooing, you know, in the shower with water, it's going to lead to buildup and inflammation. And as we know from earlier in the chat, buildup and inflammation on the scalp, bad news for your hair. So if you wash your hair regularly and you're just using dry shampoo as the occasional pick-me-up, then great. But I would check online to make sure that the specific brand or batch that you're using, especially if your bottle is a few years old, has not been recalled or that there isn't concern regarding benzene contamination. If there is, toss it out. And I am somewhat biased because I'm a consultant for Begamore, but I think Begamore has a great dry shampoo that I love and it is benzene free.
Okay. That is such a good tip. I think you hear about the benzene contamination so much more with sunscreens, but it's just as true for some dry shampoos as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we think it's during like the process of like aerosolizing something. So sunscreens are aerosolized, dry shampoos are aerosolized, that I guess at certain manufacturers, these products have been contaminated with benzene. And we know that benzene at high doses can cause cancer. So it is a serious concern. And I'm glad that, you know, kind of as a community where we know more and we're able to take action to make sure that we're safe.
Sure. Quick follow-up question to the shampoo question is, how long could you go between washes? Because that is always the follow-up question that I get when I talk about dry shampoo. They're like, okay, well then how long is too long?
So I would say at least wash your hair 1 to 2 times a week. If you are prone to dandruff, you actually need to wash your hair more frequently than that. So I wouldn't go more than about every other day, depending on your hair type. So in general, 1 to 2 times a week, but if you already have a scalp condition, washing more frequently is actually going to improve your symptoms.
Okay, the next question is about professional treatments and in-office treatments. So the question is, what sort of professional treatments are there for hair loss? I tried serums and supplements, and I want to try something more intensive.
So there are multiple treatments, many treatments. And if you do decide to seek professional help, I recommend finding a board certified dermatologist. Your dermatologist will evaluate your hair and scalp, and based on the pattern or type of hair loss that you have, may recommend over-the-counter or prescription topicals, prescription oral treatments, injections, or device-based treatments. And as far as prescription oral medicines, some that we recommend are considered off-label. So that means that they are approved medications for other conditions, but research suggests that they may help with hair loss. And I'll give you an example. Oral spironolactone is a diuretic, but it may help block hormone production at the hair follicle in higher doses. So the approach overall to treating hair loss is really multimodal. And what I mean by that is your dermatologist may suggest more than one treatment to help optimize your results. So that may be a combination of in-office treatments and at-home treatments. And we'll really make a plan using your personal medical history, which is a really important piece to this, your own exam findings, as well as your personal preferences.
Okay. And you had mentioned in injections as well as tools, or you alluded to, I would love to know more about what those might be.
So I think it depends on the type of hair loss. So platelet-rich plasma, or PRP, injections have been used for various types of hair loss, including androgenetic alopecia, as well as telogen effluvium. And I think there still needs to be more research, but there is data that suggests that it can help. But I would say overall, the data is a bit mixed. As far as device-based treatments, you may have seen those laser caps or laser cones. Those are actually kind of emitting low levels of energy, and they may help increase hair density and reduce hair shedding. But again, there's just been a small number of clinical trials. So I think the data as far as how devices may help is only growing. Similarly, microneedling has been used to stimulate hair growth, and microneedling in conjunction with different topicals, which is really exciting. I actually kind of did a version of poking holes in the skin and putting topicals on and seeing what happens at Mass General, except we were using a laser instead of microneedles. So it's a really exciting field, and what we know is changing very quickly. But your expert, your dermatologist, is going to be up to date, and you know, we'll be able to come up with something that's right for you.
That sounds so fascinating, what you just mentioned with the laser therapy. Wow, I can't wait to see what comes from that research. Okay, so the last question is a reader question from yours truly. I actually saw a video that you did that was surrounding this topic. And so I had to add it into the questions that I was asking you. It was, or the question is, can you reverse graying? Like I said, when I was doing my research on you, I came across a video and I wanted to learn more.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. You did your homework, huh? So I think there, again, hair gray is really, really interesting. And I will say the short answer is yes, you can. So hair graying is more easily reversible when you have a few grays, and again, when you're younger. And the reason is those pigment cells in the hair follicle, called melanocytes, are still able to produce pigment. You know, they haven't burnt out yet. They aren't old. They're young pigment cells, and they're able to regenerate and create hair color. So there actually are studies that show that, clinical studies that show that stress is actually linked to graying too, not just hair loss, but graying. And actually, when stressors are taken away in younger people with a few grays, the grays actually go away. So you start seeing normal hair pigment. So it's a really exciting field. And I think, you know, even by using simple modifications like reducing your stress, you know, you may be able to reduce your gray hair. So stay tuned for more.
That is so fascinating. It blew my mind. And as somebody who is, like I said earlier in the episode, at the very beginning stages of seeing some grays, that obviously piqued my interest. So anyway, thank you for asking all of our reader questions. Those are so fun and so fascinating. Okay, so the last thing that I always talk to my guests about is how they take care of themselves. You know, I always start with the beauty part of it. So let's talk about skincare and hair care. You know, what is your normal beauty routine look like?
Yeah. So as far as skincare, sun protection first. I feel like dermatologists are broken records, but it's so true. I wear a tinted mineral sunscreen every single day of the year on my face. I wash my face twice a day with a very gentle cleanser and I moisturize. You really don't need fancy stuff. And I really do think it is that simple. As far as skincare, I also like to add in this discussion that it's not just what you're putting on your face, it's what you're not putting on your face. So I will say, like, today I feel cute and glam, but if you see me in my office or you see me day to day, I don't wear makeup. And the reason is I feel like it's just something extra, you know, multiple extra products that I'm putting on my face that really aren't doing anything to improve my skin health. And the times I've gone weeks to months without wearing makeup, my skin looks better than ever. So that's kind of the skin piece. I would say as far as hair, I have come a long way. So I am much kinder to my hair now. In my teens and 20s, I colored my hair. I chemically straightened my hair every 6 months. And it completely destroyed my hair. I was doing this for about 10 years, probably from the time I was 16 to 26. And now I completely avoid coloring or any chemical treatments. I rarely use heat on my hair. And I'm not afraid of haircuts anymore. You know, I think my hair just looks healthier short. So I just wear it short now. Because I think, again, healthy skin and healthy hair is pretty skin and pretty hair. And I only use clean products on my hair and scalp for reasons that we mentioned.
Okay. I mean, you have great hair. It's nice and thick, too.
Oh, thank you. You know, again, it's like, it's taken a lot to get it back to this. But, you know, during medical school, I experienced hair loss. And it was from a lot of the things I was doing to my hair, as well as stress. So it's taken time to just kind of be kind to my body again and to be kind to my hair. And you slowly can get some growth back.
Okay. Well, that's reassuring for our listeners to hear, I'm sure. And then, you know, the second part of this question is how you take care of yourself as a whole. And, you know, like I say in every episode, we view beauty through the lens of well-being. And, you know, we believe that there are elements of this that are all interconnected. And, you know, so I'm always curious about how people take care of themselves in general.
So I was introduced to transcendental meditation, like we spoke about 4 years ago, and it's a big part of how I take time for myself and care for myself. I aim for 20 minutes once a day, and it has really just kind of changed my overall perspective and how I'm able to cope with the day. So it's really important to me. I talked about prioritizing sleep. Sleep is no joke for me. I really do go to bed early every night to make sure I can get those 9 hours. And everyone needs a different amount of time to be rested, but there are very few to no people who can go less than, you know, adults who can go less than 6 to 7 hours and be able to function on a day-to-day basis with less sleep than that. So I think it's so important for your well-being and for all of these body functions that we talked about. Sleep is important in kind of renewing and regenerating. So it's critical to me for wellness. I think as far as movement, I think walking is great for the mind and for the body. And I've dabbled in cycling and Pilates a little bit recently. But I will say, like, I am realistic. I try to do 20 minutes a day a few times a week. Nothing crazy. But I also want to be real. Like, I'd much rather sit on my couch than move. Many people, but once I'm into it, like, I always feel better. So I just try to do little doses, something realistic to do in my day that can kind of make me feel good at the end of the day that I got some movement in. And then when it comes to food, I mean, gosh, I love all of it. I try to eat things that nourish my body. So I love salads, especially really colorful, fresh salads. But I never pass up on pasta or dessert. I just don't deprive myself. I live to eat. I cook a lot. I actually got that from my mom. So I try to use seasonal ingredients when cooking. And cooking really helps me minimize the amount of processed food I eat so that I can feel really good about what I'm eating every day. And then I try to travel when I can. I think it makes me really happy. And it's part of what's so kind of beautiful and like to me. It's such like an enriching experience. Even a small local trip, discovery of something new, I think some of my best memories are from trips with loved ones.
Well, this has been such a wonderful conversation. I thought it was so, so interesting. I feel like I learned so much. And I feel like it was so helpful. I mean, we just covered so much ground. I can't believe how much we got through. So, you know, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Yes, it's my absolute pleasure. Alex, thank you so much for giving me a chance to chat and share a little bit about hair health with your viewers. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. For more beauty content from the team at MindBodyGreen, you can always read along with our content at mindbodygreen.com, follow us on social media, and of course, tune into next week's episode. If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to rate and review us. And if you ever want to reach out with questions or insights or thoughts, you can find me on Instagram at Alex_Blair_. Thanks so much for your time.